Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Thomas Halliday, his new book is Other Lands, A Journey Through Earth's Extinct Worlds. We're going backwards in time to 500 million years ago when we got organized for creatures. Right now, we're at 5.3 million years ago, the Miocene. And what we're looking at here is a very large Mediterranean basin that doesn't have any water in it. And the filling in of that basin will create opportunities for animals, sometimes dwarves and sometimes giants. It's all something of a theater piece. And the way you write it, Thomas, is so wonderful. Let's get to, where is Gargano Island? What does it look like today?
Today, Gargano is a sort of peninsula on the east coast of Italy, about two-thirds of the way down, sticking out into the Adriatic Sea. And it's this sort of large, hilly limestone region, full of these wonderful karstic caves with stalagmites and stalactites and so on that you can explore. And those caves are really where the fossils have been found, right? The rocks themselves are considerably older than the fossils, but the fossils, when they formed about 5 million years ago, they are washed into the caves, and so we sort of find them in these karstic deposits.
Do you find the saber-toothed deer there? Is that where his and her bones are?
Absolutely. I mean, there are a few species of deer today, like musk deer, for example, that have saber teeth. But Hoplitomeryx is a wonderful sort of deer-like organism from Gargano. What's more unusual, perhaps, than the saber teeth is that it has five horns on its head, giving it this sort of... from some angles, it's fairly demonic appearance.
But they were were practical. They had a predator they could fend off. How so?
Well, so their predator, the major predator, it seems, on this island. One of the interesting things about islands is that it's always a subsample of the population of a mainland, and so there aren't any big mammalian predators, but there are these giant buzzard relatives, which are... known as Freudenthal's eagles. And so these would have been absolutely interested in picking up presumably the juveniles of these creatures, because, you know, a fully grown Hoplitomeryx, even though they're, you know, dwarfed, they are small creatures, a fully grown adult is still a hefty prize for a bird to carry away. But yes, the main predators on this island were, you know, flightless barn owls and these giant eagles.
And the horns fended them off. Now, I started with Gargano Island because you can visit it today. However, the big event in the Miocene is a waterfall, which you write is 1 mile high, and the Zanclean flood. What is that, Thomas?
Yeah, so as you said in the introduction, the Mediterranean towards the end of the Miocene dried up. It lost its connection at the Straits of Gibraltar to the Atlantic Ocean, and because there's the amount of water that pours in through rivers and rain is less than just evaporates naturally, eventually that sea dried out into this kilometers deep basin. But you get an earthquake right at the end of the Miocene, which allows the Atlantic to sluice back in with this enormous weir. And that fills up the western half. But Italy and Sicily and Malta is a high area of seabed in the Mediterranean today, and was a sort of a saddle of land across which this enormous waterfall cascaded. And we have evidence of this just off the coast of Syracuse in Sicily, of canyons at the bottom of the Mediterranean, which were formed by the water that fell from, you know, this extraordinary height.
Yes, you said it's a spectacular image. I mean, it's otherworldly, which is, of course, the point of your storytelling.
Now, absolutely.
Now, because we're in the Miocene and we need to get on back to the Cambrian, we now have to turn to the fourth chapter, where we're looking now at the Oligocene, 33 million years ago. And this is about the continent of South America that Thomas identifies as an island continent. And what's important now, the least among us, is the development of the grasslands. Is this the origin of all grass on Earth, Thomas?
Well, grass existed from about some 70 million years ago, but didn't really form major ecosystems. You know, it was a relatively minor player in most environments. But as the Earth begins to dry through from the sort of relatively hot and wet times of the Paleocene and Eocene into the Oligocene, grasses, which are very well adapted to this kind of semi-arid environment, began to spread around the world. And the first evidence of their spread is from places like Tingamarica here in South America, in Chile.
And the reason grasses are important is because they provide what are systems for people, for creatures to eat. But I want to pay attention to what creatures, what's going on. Now, I thought it was an island continent. And then Thomas introduces us to the fact that there were adventures for the animals, the creatures, the insects, all things that crawled and walked from Africa. Now, how did they get to, from the Atlantic Ocean exists. It's broad. It has currents. How did they get from Africa to South America to spread their joy?
Well, yes, this is one of the sort of great stories of evolutionary biology. So the Atlantic Ocean, it did exist 33 million years ago, but it was about two-thirds of the width that it is today, but that's still a substantial distance. But what tends to happen during storms is that places where there's a major river, like for example the Congo River today, you get fragments of land detaching from the bank, which can often be really quite structurally sound, held together, and you know, with trees still upright, and they float out to sea, and creatures can get kept on, can survive on these. Now we know that the reason that we suspect this happened is because we have monkeys in South America and we have rodents in South America, but genetically their closest relatives are both African groups. And we know that the time that they diverged was recent enough that they can't have just got there by sitting on the continents as the tectonic plates separated. They must have got there after that event. And so the best hypothesis is that they rafted there across the Atlantic Ocean. But it's not just these, you know, creatures like rodents and monkeys. There are freshwater fish. There are amphibians that show this same kind of pattern, which is a sort of absolutely extraordinary idea to me, that you know, you'll have a fish that it cannot survive in salt water, yet has crossed over an ocean. But we find some of these early rodent relatives in Tingamarica, and indeed there are two separate lineages of monkeys that we know to have crossed from Africa to South America and diversified there, of which one is still around and is every species of monkey that is known in South America, from spider monkeys to howler monkeys and so on.
The reason I emphasize grasses right away is that, well, of course, we have the word to graze. Did the grasses exist before the grazers existed? What is their relationship? We think of horses as grazers, but many, many creatures do. Who came first?
Oh, well, the grazing arose as a response to the spread of grasslands. So grasses absolutely came first. Horses at this time are still relatively small organisms that are browsing in forests. You know, they're feeding on the leaves of trees primarily and softer vegetation. The reason that grazing is this very specialist way of eating plants is because grasses defend themselves against being eaten with these sharp shards of silicate crystals, essentially, in their within their leaves. And that means that in order to graze, you need to have teeth that continually grow and are very sort of robust and able to deal with this high intensity of abrasion. So yes, the evolution of horses is one of those classic stories of moving from a sort of forest-dwelling browser into this perfectly sort of adapted creature for living in wide open places where they're going to need to access a lot of food, sort of put the food through their digestive system very quickly because it's not very nutritious. So yes, horses are one of the sort of archetypical grazers, but you know there have been similar stories of evolution in evolution of grazing in several mammal groups in particular.
More travels when we come back with Thomas Halliday, a paleontologist and evolutionary biologist. His book is Other Lands, A Journey Through Earth's Extinct Worlds. We're headed to the warmth of the Eocene. I'm John Batchelor.